Good afternoon, everyone. We appreciate you attending the Palestine Organizing Across the U.S. My name's Jim Byrne. I'm a member of the Tucson Anti-War Committee, rank-and-file union educator. Any union members in the house? Yes, so, okay. Thank you so much. We've got seven great panelists from cities all across the United States that you're about to hear from. I wanted to share kind of a quick reflection, as there's just so many reflections to have in our time here so far, and just thinking about, as I'm 41, originally from upstate New York, suburban, mostly white area, and just thinking about upbringing and when you finally encounter criticisms of our systems, institutions, and ideologies, and you know the work of Edward Said and other scholars about Orientalism, and then you're like, holy crap, especially growing up in the 80s and early 90s, the imagery that we are shown of the Middle East through Hollywood, of Arab and Muslim peoples, really does its indoctrination work that only, you know, narratives and headlines that come out of October 7th can easily activate, that this was Hamas, and can you imagine, and how many people easily believed what Hamas did, this is a terrorist organization, et cetera. And that's the work that ideology, that the dominant ideology does. And one of those pieces, and it's not necessarily true, but or fully complex like that, but thinking about the imagery that growing up in that time period, and in terms of thinking about the 1987 Intifada, and all we saw of Palestinians is basically their forms of resistance were rocks. Now they've got rockets, and they are doing significant damage. And for the most just cause on the planet, as our colleagues have said up here, for the noble cause of freedom and their liberation and their right to exist. And the transformation that we've seen over the last 35 and even in the last 10 years of the capacity and the united, coordinated military capacity of the Palestinian resistance in conjunction with the regional resistance that is then being dealt their own retaliatory blows by the Zionist entity and U.S. imperialism, they have more than bloodied the nose. Sheikh Jarrah's response in 2021, they were shutting down Israeli airports with the rockets from the resistance. That was a nose bloodied. They are beating the shit out of Israeli forces, right? They don't want to go in on ground troops. They're scared. They know they're going to lose. And so we got to seize that momentum and keep driving forward. And that's what we want to hear from the panelists is if they've started brand new, how'd they get rolling? If they've been around for a long time, how did they incorporate Palestine into their anti-war organizing and things like that? So we're going to start with a Southwest sibling in the Dallas-Fort Worth Anti-War Committee and hear from Tamara first, please. Thank you.
Wow, I did not know I was going first. Well, hello, everyone. So I'm with the Dallas-Fort Worth Anti-War Committee, and we've been doing a lot for the past 6 months in the DFW Metroplex, organizing around Palestine. I'll start off first that we've been in coalition with several groups. We've been in coalition with the Palestinian Youth Movement, Dallas Chapter, the Party for Socialism and Liberation, a newly formed Jewish Voice for Peace, and Free Palestine Tarrant. And what a lot of people don't know is that North Texas and DFW in particular is a hub for arms manufacturers. We have 22 arms manufacturing companies there. And some of the big name ones are Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, Raytheon, and we actually do have the U.S. headquarters for Elbit Systems. Yeah. And North Texas in particular also has a very strong Zionist backing. We did initially attempt in coalition with these organizations and also other organizations to get a ceasefire resolution that ultimately did not happen for a lot of various reasons. We actually have two proud Zionists on our city council. We have 14 city council members, including one who has had two of her sons serve in the IOF. So we decided to basically divert our attention to more divestment efforts and targeting these arms manufacturers. So for one thing, Lockheed Martin, which is in Fort Worth, Texas, is on a U.S. Air Force base, and at that particular Lockheed Martin, they build the F-35 fighter jets. And as we know, Biden also recently approved to send 25 more of these fighter jets to Israel. We also have the General Dynamics, and that General Dynamics facility in particular does build the shells for the Blue 109 and MK-80 bomb series. The MK-80 bombs, which are nicknamed dumb bombs, meaning they are non-guided and land wherever they are. And on March 29th, Biden and his administration authorized to send 2,000 more of those bombs to Israel. And many of them have been littered across Gaza, and that's been, I believe, about over 500 of them. The Blue 109 bombs, which are also known as bunker busters, they actually penetrate through hard structures before exploding, and this has caused the leveling of apartment blocks in neighborhoods in Gaza. And for General Dynamics alone, over $25 billion in tax dollars actually went to Garland, because the General Dynamics facilities is in the city of Garland of Dallas County, for these bombs in 2023. And then, as we all know, good old Elbit Systems, Israel's largest weapons company, uses weapons and surveillance equipment used by the IOF and also the U.S. Customs and Border Protection along the U.S.-Mexico border. And we actually organized two protests at this Elbit Systems, the U.S. headquarters, which is in Fort Worth, Texas. And as a result of that, also faced a good amount of surveillance as a part of being a part of those protests. And then we also have Raytheon. But I wanted to talk about a couple actions that we have been doing in DFW in particular. Two actions, one on January 8th in response to Joe Biden coming to Dallas, particularly for the late Eddie Bernice Johnson's funeral. 13 people, including myself, now known as the Love-Filled 13, were arrested for blocking the front entrance to the Dallas Love Field Airport ahead of Joe Biden's arrival. We wanted to send a clear message to Joe Biden that obviously he is a war criminal and he has been complicit in this genocide. And we also wanted to show also the city of Dallas that we are not backing down and that Joe Biden is not welcome in our city. Of the 13, we were incarcerated for about 12 hours, but that did not stop us. In fact, it built up the momentum. On March 7th, as a result of all the bombs being sent over there, 23 protesters, including myself, known as the Garland 23, were arrested for stopping the production of the General Dynamics facility for over 5 hours, blocking all entrances to the facility. As a result of that, we lowered their stocks and cost them millions of dollars in one day. But unfortunately, also as a result of that, we were incarcerated for approximately 36 hours, experiencing medical neglect, lack of accommodation for dietary restrictions, transphobia, Islamophobia, racism, and cruel mistreatment, including the removal of religious headscarves and hijabs. Hey. But again, this absolutely did not stop us. And we sent, again, a clear message to the DFW community that we do not want these arm manufacturers in our cities. And as a result of this, this has also, you know, garnered more attention, not only to the genocide, but how many dollars are being sent specifically to Israel from our own communities. And we have been also canvassing and flyering in the neighborhood, specifically in the city of Garland, where General Dynamics is. A lot of people don't know that that particular facility is actually in the middle of a low-income neighborhood right next to a school. And imagining the environmental effects of that, and also the fact that that is where money is being spent instead of in their own neighborhoods and in their own schools. And then also on March 21st, Joe Biden decided to pay another visit to Dallas for private fundraisers. And we were able to locate what hotel he was staying at in downtown Dallas. And this was actually an action we did in coordination again with the organizations we've been in coalition with. And we were able to get pots, pans, bullhorns, any noisemaker we can think of, and got up at 5 a.m. in the morning and showed up at that hotel to make it clear that you will get absolutely no peace until we get justice. And so this is just an example of things we have continued doing in DFW and continuing on these efforts of trying to shed light on these arms manufacturers in the DFW Metroplex, and also trying to continue on base building to get more people involved and continuing to educate our communities about how this is affecting us at home, and that we should care, that it does matter. We do have a very large Arab and Palestinian and Muslim population in Dallas-Fort Worth. And so it has been beautiful to also witness, you know, again, making those intersections too with the other issues happening in our community around a Stop Cop City Dallas, as we were having a Cop City come to Dallas, and around SB4, which criminalizes our immigrant populations, giving more power to police forces to basically to racially profile and stop anyone that they suspect might be undocumented. So thank y'all for letting me speak, and I'm happy to be here today.
Thank you so much, Tamara, and the Dallas folks for coming all this way and sharing that powerful organizing. Not easy to push back like that and really step up to the plate when the captain of the imperialist machine comes to your town like that. So we appreciate you. Up next, moving up north from Grand Rapids, Michigan, we have Emerson with the Palestine Solidarity Grand Rapids. Take it away, Emerson.
I am in the company of such amazing panelists. I just want to say thank you to my co-panelists. My name is Emerson. My pronoun is they, them. I am an example. I represent an example of what a successful mass group can look like in a small, mid-sized city. Grand Rapids has a population of under 200,000 in the city proper, with under 1 million people in the metro area. It's a sprawling metro area, so that is many tens and tens of miles. It is the second largest city in Michigan. It's conservative leaning compared to its compatriots on the east side in metro Detroit area, which are far more progressive. Palestine Solidarity Grand Rapids was formed in 2021 in response to the Gaza bombings as a Freedom Road Socialist Organization mass group in coordination with a few Palestinian community members. It was essentially non-functional until the current siege on Gaza in 2023, and we now maintain a fluctuating membership of between 15 and 40 active organizing members who attend our weekly meetings. We do have a de facto core leadership team, and we utilize a democratic decision-making model. Although with organizing across lines of difference with non-communist, non-socialist, and more anarchist-leaning radicals, we have trended toward being more of a collective decision-making model as well. We've realized over the last 6 months that a nimble leadership that helps keep the group focused is what has made our movement building so successful in West Michigan. The Palestine Solidarity Grand Rapids mission is to grow and strengthen the Palestine Solidarity movement by finding dynamic ways to organize. We condemn the Israeli occupation and call for the total liberation of the Palestinian people. We oppose U.S. imperialism and support the united front of the Palestinian resistance. We decided early on to avoid using ceasefire language primarily, though we do support a ceasefire, because we unconditionally believe in the Palestinian right to resist violent occupation in any way they choose to do so. To that end, our demands are ending the siege on Gaza and ending U.S. aid to Israel. We are explicit in our support of the liberation, Our democratically decided mission statement and points of unity are read at large rallies and all of our internal meetings where we have new members in attendance. Because we're uniting so many different forces with varying politics, we need to maintain a strong and transparent message to keep everyone focused and on task. We're a non-Palestinian-led organizing group, and by being so clear in our message, it signals to the Palestinian groups that we align with that we are unequivocal when we demand power to the Palestinian resistance, and that support helps us build alliances to make our work stronger and to make everyone's work stronger. Our events are many and varied, and they bring out a diverse array of people. We've had documentary series, we've got teach-ins, we do skill-building events, we do arts and crafts events. We're trying to build many pathways through which people can engage with the struggle to provide context and to build awareness around the Palestinian liberation. Our marches and rallies draw crowds of hundreds of people, which is amazing for conservative West Michigan. We occupy the streets, we block traffic, and we have had almost no cop interference at any of our events, with one very notable exception. We have been providing a pressure campaign on our Democratic Congressperson, Hillary Skolton, who is in bed with AIPAC, and so she has been ignoring us. We did manage to sneak into a secret meeting with her legislative aide where we pressured her legislative aide to recognize Palestine's right to exist, and this is a secret that stays in the room. We did make her cry. So we had a rally of hundreds of people who marched outside of Hillary Skolton's Grand Rapids home, and we hand-delivered her a letter demanding that she end her support for Israel, to end U.S. aid to Israel, to demand an immediate ceasefire. And she responded by sending a fire truck, an ambulance, 12 squad cars filled with cops, and the chief of police to intercept us. Somebody faked a heart attack, and in the end, there was no emergency. They were trying to kettle us. We got out of there safely, although they did target our lead car with a bogus civil infraction for blocking traffic, which we have fought successfully. I will say that rumor has it, and I know this from talking to other Democratic legislative aides, that Skolton is still talking about us with her cronies on Capitol Hill, so we see that as a major success for our campaigns. Our government is complicit in genocide and crimes against humanity, and that's the primary work that we focus on. We've led 3 pressure campaigns for a symbolic ceasefire resolution on our city commission, where dozens and dozens of people spoke passionately in support of Palestine. We had almost 5,000 letters sent to the city commission, and our civic leaders rebuff us at every attempt. They relegate us to a public comment period and refuse to vote on the record. They say it's not a local issue, despite us making the connection time and time again to our tax dollars paying for a genocide. So we've pivoted to a pressure campaign similar to what Hamtramck, Michigan has passed, a Move the Money divestment campaign. So far, this has also been unsuccessful. West Michigan has, or Michigan in general, has an Israeli business incubator, which establishes Israeli businesses in Michigan. It is a big money incubator. And it's deeply interlinked with the business community, and the commissioners are not willing to compromise their bottom line. This is also linked with defense contracting. The DeVos family essentially owns West Michigan. We know that Blackwater has deep ties to the DeVos family, and so these commissioners are not about to bite the hand that feeds. To that end, we are escalating our efforts. We've blockaded military manufacturer Plassen. They make armored vehicles. They're an Israeli business. They send their armored vehicle to occupied territories. It was not successful, but it was a learning opportunity and a chance to work with affinity groups such as USPCN, PYM, SDS groups, and SJPs, the Palestinian Feminist Collective. West Michigan is a somewhat fractured organizing environment because we're isolated from the mass movements on the east side of the state, but we are successful because we've built trust with the community through being consistent and responding to calls to action. We see ourselves in Palestine Solidarity Grand Rapids as paving the way for a broader anti-imperialist movement in West Michigan, and so we're working with immigrant rights groups, we're working with the African diaspora in Grand Rapids to build a movement around the Congo as well, to shine a light on the common struggle that intersects imperialism and genocide. In the future, we hope to continue mentoring smaller communities like Muskegon, one of our partner communities, and building resources and skills to increase organizer capacity. We've got a religious outreach committee that's interested in igniting an interfaith dialogue specifically around Palestine, and we'll continue to pressure our leaders into recognizing that this is a genocide. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Emerson, and representing Grand Rapids in the anti-imperialist struggle is, one of those check that box that the movement is building and spreading everywhere. So I have an honor to introduce a comrade of mine, Maria, from the Tucson Anti-War Committee, similar city size and sprawl, and a miniature amount of the military-industrial complex that Dallas-Fort Worth has, as we're home to Raytheon and a couple of other war and death profiteers like that. So please take it away, Maria.
Thank you, Jim. My name is Maria, and I am the co-chair, along with Jim, of the Tucson Anti-War Committee in Tucson, Arizona. I want to say that it is an honor to share this weekend with everyone here, but particularly to sit on this panel next to those who are leading the fight against U.S. imperialism across the nation. Tucson Anti-War Committee has been around for more than a decade, actually, and that's largely in part due to Jim and his leadership and dedication to the fight against U.S. imperialism. So historically, TAWC has been an organization that has always been prepared to host emergency protests in response to U.S. imperial aggression across the world. It was launched in 2013 to defend Rasmea Oda, a longtime leader of the Palestinian American community in Chicago, until she was arrested on trumped-up charges, stripped of her U.S. citizenship, and deported. And so over time, TAWC hosted educational events in coalition with different forces in Tucson, from the Alliance for Global Justice, Veterans for Peace, a local Arizona-Palestine Solidarity Alliance, and more. And so in Tucson, we have been leading protests calling for hands off Syria, hands off Venezuela, hands off Nicaragua, no to the U.S.-backed fascist coup in Ukraine, U.S. troops off the Mexican border, free Simone Trinidad, free Alex Saab, and an end to U.S. aid to Israel, and free Palestine. Woo! TAWC has existed in many iterations throughout the years, and this is due to various conditions that we have in Tucson, but particularly the way that, and we've talked about this a lot lately, Tucson never really industrialized in the way that many cities in the U.S. did. We don't have the longstanding generations of class struggle interwoven into our community that we see in the Midwest and East Coast. We are a university city without many job opportunities, which results in a lot of transients with folks living there temporarily or moving out of state. And so in the fall of 2022, TAWC was relaunched and given a new breath of life, if you will, and that was with a goal to fight U.S. imperialism and advance political education in our city. Throughout 2023, we developed strong relationships with the Students for Justice in Palestine chapter at the University of Arizona and that local organization, the Arizona-Palestine Solidarity Alliance. And through an informal coalition, we were very busy during the spring of 2023 protesting the 75th year anniversary and celebrations of Israel, including one concert on campus and one celebration at the local Jewish Community Center. It was this period of time that was such a success for us. It really allowed us to develop the trust of Arab and Muslim and Palestinian students at the U of A and folks in the community. And It ultimately led us to be able to immediately respond to the start of the Al-Aqsa flood on October 7th. And I would say that one of our biggest strengths as an organization, and no doubt due to the foundation that Jim has built, is our ability to immediately respond to and protest U.S. imperialism. It was Saturday, October 7th, that we held an emergency rally on a busy street corner with just a couple hours' notice, and more than 25 people showed up as we celebrated and honored the Palestinian resistance forces storming illegal Zionist settlements. And if we look at that action in particular, we were successful in putting that action on because we as an organization have a very clear understanding and unconditional support for the Palestinian resistance and all national liberation movements. To reference what Hossam said from USPCN earlier, we know that we must support the fight for national liberation without any justification, and we respect self-determination of those movements. So in TEAWC, our slogans have consistently been end USA to Israel, free Palestine, and US out of the Middle East. We have also, similar to Grand Rapids, not adopted a ceasefire demand because of our support for the Palestinian resistance. And in our rallies, our speakers have spoken to our demand for a free Palestine from the river to the sea and an end to the occupation and the need for more than a ceasefire. This has garnered such great support from people and has really energized the crowds when we do say it. At our general meetings, we've also had discussions around needing more than a ceasefire, and the consensus has been that ceasefire is not enough. And so because of that experience through both our rallies and our meetings or practice and theory, we have maintained that line. We are the only organization in town that doesn't demand a ceasefire, and we've stood out because of it. However, when it comes to our focuses, we haven't carried through a traditional campaign in the ways that our friends in Denver definitely have. There's no doubt that Tucson is ripe for a long-term anti-war campaign. As Jim mentioned, we have Raytheon. We kind of have a trifecta of Raytheon, Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, which is the same Air Force Base that sent a squadron of A-10 Thunderbolts to Israel on October 16th, only 9 days after the start of the Al-Aqsa flood. These are the same warplanes that they sent to Afghanistan and Iraq for decades, and Border Patrol. So it's full of opportunities, but the conditions in our city are just not quite there yet for a focused long-term campaign. And as I imagine that a lot of cities have experienced, October 7th energized and activated folks in the city in a way that has never been done before. But it also came with the rise of some opportunist trends and folks who were not so much focused on the liberation of Palestine, but instead trying to kind of get out in front of cameras and get national news coverage. So to combat some of that, we have remained disciplined. We've held discussions and studies to advance that political education in our city and to get us to a place so we are ready to launch a long-term anti-war campaign. So since October 7th, we've held more than a dozen protests. Three specific ones that I want to highlight are the March for the Children of Palestine, and that brought in Palestinian, Arab, and Muslim families from all across the state of Arizona. And it was children from ages 4 to 12 holding the Free Palestine banner and leading the march with their parents behind them. And we really were able to engage the Palestinian, Arab, and Muslim communities in a way that hadn't been done before. And we established these beautiful friendships because we held a family-friendly event that was short but powerful. And the other actions that I want to highlight were both at the Air Force Base. The first one was in December in response to the U.S. warships entering the Red Sea. And the other one was just this last Monday in response to the U.S.-backed Zionist forces and their escalation in Syria and Lebanon. And I know that many of you all here have to protest out in the snow, but us Tucsonans braved the freezing 60-degree weather and raining and rain, and we brought out 15 people in the pouring rain. So all that to say is that we are very intentional in what we do. Everything we do is for a reason, and it's based on a very clear and scientific analysis of the conditions in our city, so we know not to try to replicate what Minneapolis is doing. But everything we do is to deal a blow to U.S. imperialism and for a free Palestine.
Woo! We're going to come back up to the Midwest into Milwaukee, and we have Audari from the Students for a Democratic Society at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. Take it away, brother.
Oh, hello, my name is Audari Tamayo, and you know, it's a little cold in here, and you know, just to indulge me, I like to start off with the chant. Up, up with liberation.
Up, up with liberation.
Down, down with occupation. Thank you, thank you. You know, before I get on with my spiel, I'd like to say I'm honored and, you know, extremely humbled to be here today in the presence of longtime militants in the struggle for collective liberation. When I was first asked to speak and, you know, participate in this panel, you know, I thought it was a mistake. You know, I nearly declined because I, you know, didn't feel like I had done enough, didn't feel worthy. But, you know, we know that that's not what it's about. You know, I'm here because my place, like all of your places, in the international struggle for freedom and liberation. So power to all those who don't fear freedom. And I'm the proud co-chair of the UW-Milwaukee chapter, the Students for a Democratic Society, and I'm also a proud member of the Milwaukee Five, the five members of SDS who were arrested on February 9th after sitting in for 6 hours in our administrative school building. You know, we were demanding a meeting with our chancellor to make him cut all ties with Israel. You know, at the orders of the UWM administration, you know, 10 different police departments from in and outside Milwaukee County, and later 20 UWM pigs zip-tied us, threw us on the ground, while two pigs knelt on my back. And it's a damn shame, but I don't say that to elicit any sympathy. Even though my back still hurts, my wrist still makes a funny noise, and my mom is still worried sick, I say this because no matter the sort of pressure we and repression our movement faces, we must remember the daily reality of the Palestinian people for 75 years. On top of the tens of thousands of murdered Palestinians, political prisoners have had their limbs amputated due to prolonged periods of sitting in zip ties. People trapped under rubble who are later ran over by settler tanks. Tens of thousands of parents who are mourning their children, not just worried about them. That requires us, who want to claim to be in solidarity, to be serious with our demands and be serious with our actions. If not, we're merely engaging in virtue signaling and child's play. The pigs and university administrators might think that them leaving us with sore bodies and bruises is gonna somehow deter us. But the only thing that they have left us with is with an even greater commitment to stand up and fight back. Our crime was demanding an end to weapons manufacturers coming on our campus, an end to business deals with genocide profiteers, an end to study abroad trips to stolen Palestinian land, and to change the name of the Golda Meir Library. You know, put simply, our crime was standing in unconditional solidarity with the Palestinian resistance. That's why the state has charged us with unlawful occupation, unlawful assembly, prohibited signs, and prohibited noise. Our so-called prohibited noise was our incessant chants. Our prohibited signs were the Palestinian flags and banners with our campaign slogans that we took inside. Our unlawful assembly was us exercising our right to protest. And in case you think you heard me wrong, yeah, they charged us with unlawful occupation, the very crime that they're committing onto the Palestinian people. But we not only charge them with unlawful occupation, we charge them with genocide. You know, the charges thrown at us are not only bogus, but are an insult to the Palestinian people and all people who have experienced the daily war crimes and crimes against humanity aided and abetted by the U.S. government. Like many others, we have demanded our university cut ties with Israel and nothing less. You know, for some background, UWM-SDS had 3 members in September. In the early days of the fall semester and for most of the previous year, the campaign focus was on increasing black enrollment on campus because Milwaukee is a 40% black city, yet UWM is only 6% black. You know, we were also tangentially demanding a justice for Deja Welsh, a trans black woman who was brutalized by the UWM police department after having a mental health crisis. She was forced off campus and now the university refuses to hand over her transcripts and now she can't continue on her education elsewhere. No, and admittedly, the campaign momentum had been slow, but the 3, sometimes 2 UWM-SDS members kept their spirits alive working with local organizations such as the Milwaukee Alliance Against Racism and Political Repression, and, you know, the Freedom Road Social Organization and many other organizations that have, you know, been integral to the movement in Milwaukee and Wisconsin. But as has been stated time and time again, you know, witnessing the heroic revolution taking place in Palestine liberated the minds of many people here in the belly of the beast. You know, because of all this, all aspects of our movement saw revitalization because people began to realize the interconnected nature of the issues we were all confronted with. You know, today we have no less than 20 strong members, you know, coming to our weekly meetings and many more ready to spring into action at a moment's notice. But this didn't occur out of nowhere. And while this type of energy is, you know, relatively new and hasn't been seen for many, many years in Milwaukee, much less at UWM, you know, it's a result of the many years of organizing and the many months of organizing recently. You know, the campaign to change the name of the Golden Meir Library is not new and has had many iterations over the last couple of years, most recently by the Students for Justice in Palestine at UWM. And we have worked closely with the SJP at UWM, worked closely with the Muslim Student Association, and helped build a broad united front of student organizations on campus. Our campaign to cut ties with Israel is also endorsed by the Wisconsin Coalition for Justice in Palestine, which has over 65 organizations. Our current campaign to cut ties was launched shortly after the October 7th popular Palestinian uprising and subsequent escalation of the genocidal settler project. And when not too long before that, many students were apprehensive to be too loud or even show up to a protest. It didn't take much to see some of the largest, if not the largest, pro-Palestine solidarity actions in Milwaukee and Wisconsin history. Yeah. And recently, on April 2nd, nearly 50,000 Wisconsinites voted uninstructed in the primary election, sending a clear message to Genocide Joe, demonstrating the numerical extent of the statewide mass movement for justice in Palestine. And we are proud to be part of the movement, and we are proud to say that we are here to stay. But this doesn't mean that we are, you know, simply ignoring everything else we were doing before. We are still organizing actions in, you know, in support of Deja to make our university actually be a public university. But you can ask Deja, you can ask the people of Milwaukee themselves, and they will say, free Palestine from the river to the sea. You know, being that we are students, not just in name, we are students of history, students of the people's movements. We know that the people are who make history. We had experience with 75 plus years of occupation, 75 plus years of displacement, 75 plus years of genocidal settler colonial project leads to revolt, at least to the oppressed fighting for liberation by any means necessary. We would not sit back, watch, and simply state our support with words. We were going to demonstrate our support by taking direct action and understanding that the liberation of the Palestinian people is linked, inextricably linked, to the liberation of all oppressed peoples of the world. And always taking in the words of the martyred Palestinian revolutionary Hassan Kanafani, the Palestinian cause is not a cause for the Palestinians alone, but a cause for all revolutionaries wherever they may be. It is a cause for all the exploited and oppressed masses of our era. You know, the fact that Palestinian liberation is linked to the liberation of all peoples of the world isn't just rhetoric. The Israeli occupation forces train with the same occupation forces in our streets and our barrios. The same surveillance technology used in the Palestinian camps and apartheid wall is the same technology used against immigrants at the U.S. border. I don't think I need to remind people, but the Yankees and their Zionist proxies have always been on the wrong side of history, the wrong side of the people. From collaborating and arming and funding the fascist dictatorships of Latin America to siding with the apartheid governments in Africa, the list goes on and the pattern was always the same: to displace and subjugate native peoples in the name of the U.S. empire. So that's why I cheered when the Palestinians rose up and tore down those walls, because we will do the same here. Because when the Palestinian resistance strikes a blow against U.S. imperialism, it is a win for us all. Yeah. You know, and along with that, we see the anti-imperialist struggle in Palestine linked on our campus. We see us as participants in that struggle because our university is nothing but the ideological arm of the state, of the ruling class. We don't need to look much further than the responses to our movement to see where they stand. Much like our sister chapter here in the Twin Cities, we were placed on probation. And while Florida State University, SDS, and SJP chapters across the country have been suspended. But this has not stopped us. We don't need permission from the same people who are standing against liberation. We say to hell with that. The student movement is here to stay. You know, The school administration has released various statements condemning the sit-in, defending the police who broke the law. They can condemn us all they want because we got that meeting anyways, showing that the student movement and direct action are to be taken seriously. But I'm not going to sit here and say that that meeting was the end-all, be-all. You know, it didn't result in, you know, an immediate change, but the tide on campus has massively shifted. Students no longer feel that the administration are untouchable. Not only does our petition have nearly 1,000 signatures, we have not let those genocide abettors rest. We have constantly called, emailed, and protested at the chancellor's mansion. Because they don't deserve any peace if the Palestinians have none. You know, in typical hypocritical fashion, they released after a vandalism incident on campus, they implicated SDS, and half a dozen media reporters reached out for comment after ignoring everything that had been going on. The vandalism in question was a broken window and spray painted Free Palestine. You know, but we said that we didn't care that it happened. You know, while SDS wasn't involved in the incident, we only say that the people who committed the act joined SDS and helped us build this movement, help us, you know, direct that energy to building the mass movement. Because what does the school expect naming a building after war criminal? What do they expect, you know, memorializing someone like Golda Meir? You know, the fact that a window was broken is nothing to the 35,000 martyrs, the obliterated schools, neighborhood, and places of worship. UWM Milwaukee, like all universities within the belly of the beast, is complicit in the genocide of Palestinians, not just by repressing our movements, but by collaborating with weapons manufacturers, collaborating with settler universities, and memorializing the settler fascist Golda Meir. We don't owe those people who commit crimes against the people any sort of respect. You know, a few days ago, on Thursday, myself and, you know, the other integrants of the Milwaukee Five had our first court appearance where we pleaded not guilty. And while we went through that circus, the aftermath of the destruction at the hands of the Israeli occupation forces at Al-Shifa Hospital was broadcast to the world. And yet they dare call us criminals and they dare call the freedom fighters of Palestine terrorists. If our only crime is standing in solidarity with Palestine, then so be it. The only judge we care about is the people, and the people say Free Palestine from the river to the sea within our lifetime. You know, it was once said that history will absolve us, but in the age of smartphones and live streams, we don't need to wait for history to absolve us because we are witnessing the reality of Palestine in real time, and we need not look further than the Sykes-Picot Agreement, Balfour Declaration, and everything since to understand that this is a matter of settler colonialism. This is a matter of genocide, and the ruling class of this country has long been responsible. And, you know, I'd like to leave us with a couple words from Che Guevara. He said, "I envy you North Americans. You are very lucky. You live in the belly of the beast. We need to recognize our place in this movement and embrace it. So let's join our Palestinian siblings in the fight for liberation. Dare to struggle. Dare to struggle." Thank you.
Thank you, Audaudi, and solidarity in your struggle to fight that BS charges on that. And let us know if you need any national calls. I'm reminded of January 2003 when there was a probably 300,000 person rally in D.C. to try to stop the invasion of Iraq again. And feeling like I've never seen a crowd like that before, with the kind of speakers and presence and people trying to harken back to the 60s and 70s when the anti-war movement played a significant role alongside the liberation forces of Vietnam. And we were unsuccessful at stopping that invasion and continued occupation. But I think those experiences and the veteran comrades continuing to organize from the past 20 years forward, mixing with the fight against the Muslim bans that in the previous workshop, a comrade from New Orleans raised, those things fused with a just absolute no longer willing to go along with either political party's interpretation of what's going on. Somebody once said that there's three conditions for a revolutionary situation and that the ruling class can go on no longer ruling in the old ways and that the people are unwilling to be ruled in that way. I think we're seeing the tide turn and Palestine is that fulcrum on it. So in that light, I want to speaking of New Orleans, from the New Orleans Stop Helping Israel ports, we have Nikki to share all the awesome things that they've been doing down in Louisiana. Please take it away.
Thank you, Jim. Hola a todos. Hello to you all. If we can start with the chant, just repeat after me. Stop the aid.
Stop the aid.
Stop the trade.
Trade.
Thank you. Thank you all for your energy, your time, and your attention. I am beyond grateful to be here among such panelists, like Aldari said earlier. And my name is Nikesha Gonzalez. I'm here for NoShip, New Orleans Stop Helping Israel's Ports, a Palestinian-led movement directly inspired by South Africa's BDS movement to end apartheid. We aim to pressure New Orleans to end all aid to Israel, and we're doing so through publishing multiple demands, leading us to take direct action to ensure that they're listened to by our city so they get no peace. I'll be sharing a few of them, starting off with one of our main demands, to end aid from New Orleans to the port of Ashdod, which is an Israeli port, including our demand to dissolve their innovation embassy, which aims to import Israeli innovation to New Orleans, of which they agreed to push for, and I quote, knowledge sharing, joint business partnerships, and dual infrastructure, embracing emerging technologies for mutual economic benefit. We reject that. Following a 2022 trade mission to Israel, GNO Inc., which is another local company, leaders and representatives from Israel's ports of Ashdod released a letter of intent to create the innovation embassy with our city. We aim to disrupt and dissolve such embassy. We also have shared this information, which has not been made as publicly accessible to our community, to push for that economic cooperation and twinning partnership to end, because we want the city to know that in ensuring that the Port of Ashdod and the Port Accelerator Program continues, our city is actively complicit in supporting genocidal state while simultaneously misusing valuable resources that could be aiding our New Orleans communities. I am a local, and a lot of our near libraries are currently shut down and have been shut down for a couple months, and our money is being used to fund such disgusting genocidal projects. We want to push for a stop to any joint training, intelligence sharing, and other exchanges between the NOPD, JPSO, and the Israeli military and police forces. And this we see as a critical demand because we have seen and experienced an increase in police repression, specifically following after our actions, starting up around last month, around the 13th, after we hosted a disruption of panels for the New Orleans Entrepreneur Week, a planned disruption of various corporations that profit from business and investments in the state of Israel, including but not limited to Entergy, ExxonMobil, and GNO Inc. Our purpose to disrupt the panel was to amplify concerns about the NOE delegates' business ventures with Israel and their support and investment in the Innovation Embassy. And sadly, this saw the physical assault of a student by Tulane University faculty, followed by the arrest of another organizer, Tony Jones, a beloved local organizer with New Orleans for community oversight of the police, who attended a protest near Tulane's campus to defend the student that was assaulted in our action the previous week, subjecting her to, again, trumped up charges, as multiple of the other panelists have shared today, a battery of an officer, interfering with a lawful investigation, and obstructing a public walkway and resisting an officer. The purpose of the protest was to condemn the Tulane faculty member, Walter Isaacson, a professor that attacked the pro-Palestine student that was at the protest, physically removing them from the room, even though there was security present. He decided we were being too obnoxious and physically put his hands on one of the students' presence. Felix Allen, as well, was another arrested organizer for the New Orleans for community oversight of police, and who also faced trumped up charges of disrupting the peace and resisting obstructing an officer, all of which happened after they engaged with our actions. I just want to stress the dangers of continuing joint training when our police is already a prime example of enacting political violence. For 17-year-olds now can be tried as adults for all crimes in our state, as well as recently seeing an expansion in death penalty methods after our state reinstated nitrogen gas. And to highlight that Louisiana already has one of the highest incarceration rates in the country. And this is something that while they dropped a couple years back, They fought back to regain that infamous title by incarcerating, detaining undocumented migrants and refilling those jail cells. Shame on our city. And through this, there was a last reform made at the end of February that can increase the police prison population and prevent many from being released through parole or rehabilitation programs. So this is just one of the reasons why we push for an end to joint training, because this political suppression is extremely tied to not just what the U.S. knows from its own history, but through its detailed joint operations with the IOF. And we aim to hold the Port of New Orleans and affiliated businesses, because we are coming for those business owners as well, local or not, accountable for the transfer, shipping, and trade of weapons and chemicals to the Israeli government, because that is something that is happening through our ports. A main that we do, a way in which we do this is by holding monthly actions wherein community members are encouraged to come to the port to give public comments to the Port of New Orleans board members. And these comments, we have tried to adhere to their humanity, to statistics, to better business proposals, and we have been ignored month after month. There was this specific month where they approved WSP Global Inc. contract, even after many testimonies came to give public comments in opposition, after raising concerns that global organizations are calling for WSP Global Inc. to be included to the UN database of businesses operating in illegal Israeli settlements and for its involvement in expanding the Jerusalem light train. And they still, first, they kicked us out of the public comments because we were being disruptive, because we could tell that this was going to end in an agreement. We were kicked out, and then they voted of which to pass the contract. Shame on our port. Thank you. And then I think I should touch upon the origins of our org. We did start up around November, again, through a couple of the Palestine-led organizers that have also already been pretty involved in organizing before. Though our group has a really strong foundation, we make sure that we invite community members to every weekly meeting to ensure that we also held accountable to our own actions. And some of the things that we've held were the first motorcade of our city. We also held the die-in, apart from all of the protests in which we participate. And to our pressure, all of the arrested organizers that I mentioned earlier were released within that same day due to our efforts of public defense campaigns. Thank you. We're still pushing for all charges to be dropped. We now have a scheduled meeting with board members after the specific last altercation wherein one of the people giving public comments was escorted by police off of the podium for making indecent remarks to one of the board members. And then that led to the arrest of the person involved in the public comments for trying to walk out. And now the board members that were bullied during some of the public comments have removed the Ukrainian flag from their Facebook, as well as our pressure on the Port of Ashdod saw them officially block all U.S. People trying to access their official website to be just nationwide. So, like, nobody can access that website anymore, even in the U.S. They flagged it as a concern for security. And we aim to hold our city accountable and contribute to more of the struggle of ending an imperialist U.S. aid to a genocidal Israel. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Nikki, and all the good work that No Ship has been doing. Great name and great actions there. We're going to move up into the Rocky Mountains area, Denver anti-war action. Denver located just north of Florence, Colorado, which is home to the federal Supermax prison that houses a comrade of ours, the Colombian revolutionary Simon Trinidad. So we want to demand his freedom immediately. He can go back to his home country and participate in repairing that country's situation and actually help institute true, just, and transformative peace there. So I'm going to hand it over to Sol from Dawa, please.
All right, everyone. I'm going to start off with a chant, my favorite chant we have in Denver. 2, 4, 6, 8.
2, 4, 6, 8.
Smash the Zionist settler state. My name is Sulvai Swain, and I'm an organizer of the Denver Anti-War Action, or DAWA for short. We are a new grassroots non-tendency organization just founded in January, comprised of activists dedicated to fighting back against United States imperialism. Before hopping into some of the details of our new campaign against Lockheed Martin, I want to take a few minutes to discuss why we chose our campaign. Since Israel and its genocide in Palestine are the primary basis of U.S. imperialism, we knew that the most important question to answer was how to best assist the Palestinian people and therefore the Palestinian resistance in their struggle for liberation from genocide and occupation. The people of Palestine stand with the resistance, and we unapologetically do as well. In Colorado, we believe the best way for us to do our part to work towards dealing a decisive blow against weapons manufacturers. Out of the many manufacturers in our state, Lockheed Martin is the largest, comprising 10% of all Pentagon contracts nationally. And they also manufacture the satellites and GPS systems that are integral to modern weaponry. As we learned earlier, these types of technology have become one of the primary focuses of the U.S. military in the form of the Space Force. Shame. The people, additionally, have had great amounts of energy around discussing militant action centered around weapons manufacturers, with Lockheed Martin being the most recognizable of these companies. For these reasons and more, we found Lockheed Martin to be the perfect target for our work. Not only do we aim to fulfill our demands of Colorado completely divesting from Lockheed Martin and Lockheed Martin ceasing all material support to Israel, but we hope to bring this fight to a national level, as Lockheed Martin is unfortunately the economic base of cities around the country. On that note, if you are interested in helping us in this struggle at a national level, please get in contact with me or one of the other DAWA organizers here today so that we can do national days of actions and other coordinated actions against Lockheed. Zooming into the local level, Littleton, a city just south of Denver, is the primary area in which we are carrying out our campaign. While there are other Lockheed Martin locations around Colorado, in Littleton, the intense concentration of three separate Lockheed Martin campuses means that the entire economy of Littleton is functionally reliant upon Lockheed Martin. Our demand for Colorado to divest from Lockheed Martin is targeted to end this reliance upon Lockheed and to end the kickbacks that the company gets from our taxes. We demand cities based around the people, based around our healthcare, education, and housing, not war profiteering and genocide. While this is a new campaign with only two actions so far, we have already realized some level of success. To start, we launched our campaign with a sign making and teaching about the history of Lockheed and followed it up the next day with an all-day picket of Lockheed. These two actions proved to us the popular energy around organizing against Lockheed Martin. Not only was this a success for the event, but successful for our long-term goals as well, as we have seen an immediate increase in our meeting attendance and, most importantly, active participation in organizational tasks. You can recruit all the people that you want, but people only stick around if you give them the chance to be consolidated into an organization through their contributions. So we're really excited to see the high energy of all these new members. We believe that the reason for the success is that our campaign against Lockheed Martin is re-energizing people who have grown tired of continuing to rally against genocide with very little material gain, and proves the effectiveness of choosing a campaign based upon the will of the people. Overall, we saw tons of engagement after we were more strategic about choosing our campaign because we analyzed the excitement around disrupting weapons manufacturers in our city and could provide the organization and campaign to make this energy actionable. Coloradans don't support genocide. No need for Lockheed. Over the course of our all-day picket, we are also able to take away some valuable lessons in navigating suppressing forces such as the police. Previously, we had staged multiple protests where we occupied busy intersections in Denver only for the cops to close off 3 to 4 blocks in each direction. While this did cause some traffic delays and stuff like that, these tactics sadly silenced our visible and audible impressions upon the city. For this action, we chose our location with much more purpose. After scouting out the various Lockheed locations, we chose to occupy an intersection outside of their headquarters. By choosing this choke point, which is the only road into Lockheed, we set ourselves up for a win-win situation. The cops could either create an absolute nightmare for traffic by redirecting Lockheed employees through a small back road, or they could leave us alone. They chose the latter, and by doing so, we were able to force every Lockheed Martin employee to see our banners and signs and listen to our demands and listen to us call them out for their role in genocide. With these employees, plus other traffic, we're able to leave thousands of people with the knowledge that Coloradans will not stand silent in the face of weapons manufacturers in our backyard, and we plan to return to this location many more times and continue to escalate there. Originally, we had a campaign that targeted Jared Polis, the governor of Colorado, who is bought by the Israel lobby and has a strong relationship with the Jewish National Fund. This is a genocidal organization that created the original 1948 Village Files and has been involved in the genocide of Palestinians for over 100 years and continues to be a pivotal player in the genocide to this day. While Denver community members and activists did have the energy around targeting Polis, many other orgs were already taking up work around Polis and other politicians. Because of this, we did not find too much success in this initial campaign. We were able to have some large rallies and some very disruptive car rallies that I'll get to, but nothing which created the conditions for long-term material gains. With the lack of sustained success and so many people in Denver expressing a strong desire for more confrontational and more militant actions that have a material benefit for Palestine, we decided to switch campaigns. This has been the best decision for DAWA so far and gave us the important lesson that you should never get too attached to a campaign because there's always a better strategy to achieve your goals as an organization. We put a lot of work into our Lockheed campaign, but our efforts have been much more effective when targeting Lockheed, as evidenced by the positive responses of the people. We have also gained a ton of experience in our coalition-based work. In Denver, working with the Colorado Palestine Coalition, or CPC, has led us contribute to large actions such as emergency rallies for Rafah, International Women's Day focused events on Palestinian women, a disruption of a fundraiser for Democrats called DemFest, and more. This has been a good relationship. Coalition work has been essential to keeping the energy up around mobilizations for Palestine, while the independent orgs within the coalition have been able to focus on achieving their specific campaigns. This coalition is where DAWA got start as well. Because the coalition has been comprised of organizations consisting of specific religious, ethnic, student, or political groups, there was a need for a more general organization to join the fight for Palestine. DAWA filled this role by being a non-tendency group that accepts anyone opposed to U.S. foreign aggression and intervention. Regardless of the fact that we are a newer organization, we have high hopes on the horizon in our fight against Lockheed and for a free Palestine. We have learned a lot in these few months of organizing, especially in regards to following the popular demands of the people and the proper strategies to organize our campaign. We will achieve our demands for Lockheed Martin to cease its material support to Israel and for Colorado to divest from Lockheed Martin. If you would like to help make these demands happen, again, please reach out to us and we can coordinate actions against Lockheed on a national level. Thank you.
Last, our seventh panelist from the seventh city. We've got Sanaa from Americans Muslims for Palestine, right out of here from Minneapolis. Please take it away.
Thank you, guys. I really, really am so, so empowered by this gathering. I feel so sad that I had to be at home doing homework yesterday and I couldn't be here and I have to go home and do homework after this. But I'm really, really honored to be here sharing the stage with these panelists. And I just want to quickly give a shout out to all the organizers of UNAC. I mean, like, AMP is really cool, but like UNAC, you guys, is really cool. Really, really cool. So I feel like I was misled, like I was told, like, I have to talk about a very specific campaign, but these guys got to talk about like everything, but also I don't want to get too ahead of myself and talk about like every single thing, because then I'd be talking forever, but I want to talk about something that's also really, really, really cool, and that is divestment. And I know a lot of our panelists have been talking about their different divestment projects, and I want to talk about how Minnesota has gone about this, how Minnesota has gone about their divestment campaign.
because I think it's extremely robust and it's been so, so effective and amazing. So the reason why I want to talk about this is divestment is often understood as maybe not explicitly, but let's be honest, guys. Sometimes internally, it can feel like when you're doing all these protests, divestment feels like kind of this distant, unattainable goal, right? It's like something like, oh, you know, we passed these symbolic, and I'm not trying to diss divestment resolutions on the university campuses. I think they're extremely important, but sometimes it feels like we never get past the stage of passing symbolic resolutions. And Minnesota, the Free Palestine Coalition, American Muslims for Palestine, and our affiliated organizations, we have worked very hard at constructing a roadmap and a pathway so that divestment is no longer symbolic. Divestment is no longer just something we talk about. We talk about divestment in these sporadic protests. And not that they're not important, they're very important. But we have constructed a pathway so that we can see material change, so that we can see actual Minnesota legislators, lawmakers passing resolutions to divest our pension funds and our tax dollars from apartheid Israel. And I want to talk about that pathway. I want to talk about the things that we've been strategizing because it's so cool. It's really, really cool. So first, I want to talk about the SBI project as a whole, the State Board of Investments project. I'll define what that is and what it means. I don't have to go too long into that. And then I'm going to talk about how we have gone about organizing about that. So the State Board of Investments, it's a government entity which is in charge of all of the retirement funds and where the pension funds in the state of Minnesota go. So that includes like stocks, private equity firms, all the retirement funds of public employees. So the State Board of Investment is comprised of our governor, the state auditor, the state secretary, and the attorney general. So four of these guys, which are complete losers because they're investing $94 million of public employees' pension funds into weapons companies and over $413 million into the war industry as a whole. Absolute shame. This is ridiculous. We've been protesting this for years. I know. Shame. And those companies include Elbit Systems, they include other companies like Lockheed Martin that are complicit in surveillance, providing technology to the Israeli occupation, or directly invested into Israel itself. That's our tax dollars, that's our public employee. I mean, listen, like, I want to be a professor, you totally can't tell, right? And if I do, I will have to know that my pension funds are being invested in something that's slaughtering my family back home. So AMP and the Free Palestine Coalition, the anti-war coalition here in Minnesota, we've been working on trying to make sure that within our lifetime, when I become a professor, that's not happening anymore. So how are we doing this? How did we do that? So there's a number of different actions that I want to highlight, but the first one that I want to talk about, the second one is kind of an umbrella of like different actions, but the first one is how we've been engaging with the SBI directly, yeah? Through the platforms that they give us, which we kind of like take up and like pack the room and make it all about Palestine. So we have been getting folks that have been packing the room at the State Board of Investments meeting every single quarter. And I want to call out the Anti-War Committee here in Minnesota because they have been spearheading that effort of getting folks. Anti-War Committee, everyone give them a round of applause. They're so cool. The last SBI gathering was all dominated with discussions about Palestine. We had so many people filling out the form to testify at the State Board of Investments gathering, and like we kind of lied and said we're just going to talk about like investments in general. Like, duh, it's about investments, obviously. But instead, everybody came and talked about Palestine. And the response that we get every single time is that those four members of the State Board of Investment just stare at us, they nod, nothing, not even a thank you, not even, doesn't even matter. But the win is that we were there and that we packed that room and that we showed them that they're not going to get a break from us. So that's how we've engaged with them via the platforms that they've been giving us. But listen, we're not waiting for them to give us a platform. So that leads me to the second thing that we've been doing, which is, and if you're in the Free Palestine Coalition, you've probably heard this phrase a million times, but your girl really loves disruptions. I love disruptions, and that's what we've been doing. We've been doing a really good job at disruptive action. And the reason why I think disruptions are so critical, not just because that we shouldn't wait for our elected representatives to give us a platform and to kind of play by the rules, but when we shut down business as usual, when we do not allow them to get their work done, they gotta listen to us. And that's exactly what's been happening. So a few examples of some really great disruptions that we have done. This year, Governor Walz, who is the governor of Minnesota, sits on the State Board of Investments, total racist, he decided he was going to organize a MLK Day celebration. As if you can memorialize an anti-war hero while investing our finances, our tax dollars, into institutions that directly harm Black and Brown Americans here at home and in Palestine. So what we did is with our partners at police accountability organizations here in the Twin Cities, with Twin Cities Coalition for Justice for Jamar, with the Free Palestine Coalition, other police accountability folks. So he has this giant celebration. It's at the Ordway, which is not too far from here, actually. It's a big theater. And we had someone, actually, I think she's right in here. Liz, are you there? Is that you? There she is, that's Liz! She's actually the one that led our disruption. So what we did is we're up on this balcony, and Governor Walz, so let's say this is the balcony. Governor Walz is like back there, okay? And he's like down on the first floor. And then we thought that he was gonna speak. He didn't end up speaking, but we were like, okay, this is our moment, this is our moment. So Liz gets up, and she shouts at Governor Walz, and she says, how can you memorialize an anti-war hero when you are funding the genocide of the Palestinians? And do you know what Governor Walz does? He gets up and he leaves. Like, he literally leaves through the back door. And suddenly, listen to what we did. So we had folks planted in every part of the audience, and nobody knew that. It was like so covert. And then once Liz was getting escorted out, it was like just one of the most powerful things I've ever seen. Like, the whole theater just starts, people just standing up and shouting. Let's do our chant, you guys. Governor Walz, you can't hide.
Governor Walz, you can't hide.
We charge you with genocide.
We charge you with genocide.
Governor Walz, you can't hide. We charge you with genocide.
We charge you with genocide.
And we just kept chanting until the guy fled. And it was amazing. So he did not get a break from us that day, by the way. Earlier that day, we organized it this way. We had folks attend MLK Breakfast, which is like, just not that great. It's like a very corporatized MLK gathering, which is like super hypocritical. And like every politician and their mom goes. So we had a few of us go there, and Governor Walz was there again. So that morning, we go up to Governor Walz, and we had someone being like, hey, Governor, and he like shakes his hand, and he's like, you know, how can you memorialize MLK when you're funding the slaughter of the Palestinians? And he's like, well, you could shoot me an email, and we'll talk about it. And then he turns, and he sees that I was holding a camera, and then he's like, thank you. And then he just starts walking away. And of course, we posted it on Instagram. It got viewed like billions of times. But the point of this is, we are publicly embarrassing Governor Walz, because he's publicly embarrassing himself, and then we're putting that on camera, right? And we're showing him that he cannot continue business as usual. He cannot have these stupid little gatherings as long as he's going to continue funding the slaughter of the Palestinians. So where's this pathway going? Earlier, I talked about a pathway to getting material change. This is not just one incremental event. This is not just one sporadic event. We have organized such that every single time Governor Walz is making a public appearance, we are bird-dogging, we are going, and we are disrupting his events. It has gotten to a point. He is not holding public events anymore. He is literally not holding public events. We had the anti-war committee organize 14 activists to do civil disobedience on his lawn the day before the last SBI meeting. They got arrested as they stayed there for, how many hours was it, Meredith? The big problem was the temperature. It was really freaking cold, but 14 activists. And this is not the first time. We showed up at his house during his Christmas party when he was watching, you know, Sunday football. We have been at his house. I think at this point he just wants to move. I really think so. And it's fine because we'll follow him to the next place that he moves. But we've also had folks organizing billboard campaigns. There are billboards right here in Minnesota that says divest Minnesota from apartheid Israel. Yard signs that have been sold, divest Minnesota. Everywhere Governor Walz drives, he is going to see our message that we have put very clearly. And you know what, you guys? His State of the State address, which he normally does right here at the state capitol every year, he fled 2 hours away to do it at Owatonna because he knows that he can't hide. Absolutely. So, lastly, I know I probably am at time. How much time do I have? I'm at time. Can I say one more thing? Yes, I can. Okay, so how do I know this is working and where are we going with this? After the Vote Uncommitted campaign, which I just want to, disclaimer, AMP is a 501c3. I may or may not be involved in Vote Uncommitted, but not via AMP, so just a note about that. 1 in 5 Minnesota Democrats in the primaries voted uncommitted. And the day after, the day after Governor Walz got up on CNN, this is the first time he uttered the P word, Palestine. This is the very first time we heard him say anything about Palestine. He suddenly gave this spiel about how, like, it's very sad what's happening in Gaza and blah, 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 blah. And we see 1 in 5 Democrats voted uncommitted. And he said, we need to get them back. Oh, honey, you're not getting us back? So where is this going? Now, AMP, as part of our pathway, it's not just disruptions. We are organizing to get a divestment bill in the Minnesota State House. We have already gotten legislators that have agreed to author this bill in the Minnesota State House. And even if it does not pass in the next legislative session, we are going to pack those halls, and it will be monumental that this bill gets introduced, and that they see for the very first time, Governor Walz, you're not getting us back. These are thousands. You're not going to get them back. So free Palestine, and Governor Walz, you can never hide.
So we've got to end right here, but please give your round of applause. Also for yourselves, we all know that you're doing Palestine solidarity work in your cities. We just had the opportunity to hear from these 7. So round of applause for the 7 panelists, as well as yourselves. Free Palestine, y'all.